Do we have counsel here for the next case, CVC Investments?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, come on up. Good morning, everybody. This case is A24-1915, CVC Investments LLP et al. Versus State Farm Fire and Casualty Company respondents. Counsel, each of you has 15 minutes for your principal arguments, 5 minutes for rebuttal for the appellant if you choose to use it. The case is being live streamed. The arguments are being live streamed, and then an audio version only will appear on our website later. The podium goes up and down with a toggle switch that's sort of at waist high. If you want to adjust it when you get up there, take your time to get comfortable. And then you will state your name and the party you represent for the record when you start your argument. And appellant, if you want to take the podium, get set up. We'll be ready for you when you are.
May it please the court. My name is Ed Beckman, and I represent the appellants. This court has said that the declaratory judgments permit determination of a controversy before obligations are repudiated or rights violated, essentially allowing one who walks in the dark to turn on the lights before rather than after one steps in the hole. And that's Cincinnati Insurance v. Frank. And I think that's the concept here that I would like to start off with the court, is that our declaratory judgment statute in two sections, 555.03 for contracts, 555.02 for statutes and contracts and so on, allow for an adjudication before another party says, we disagree, or sort of formally says, we disagree. And that is what we asked for in the pleadings, which asked for multiple declarations from the court, not just one. And it was an error of law for the district court to only focus on appraisal. For example, in paragraph 26, one of the requests for declaratory judgment was application of the building codes, one of the hottest topics before this court, and now the Minnesota Supreme Court in the Campbell v. Great Northwestern case. Whether or not there needs to be an apportionment of damages between storms in one policy period, that's paragraph 27. Calculation of interest under two interest statutes, we ask for a declaration of that. Construction of policy language to conform to statute, because under Watson v. USAA, policies that do not conform to the statutory form policy language need to be conformed. And then, of course, there is the applicability of the appraisal clause, which this court just issued an opinion on in December 2024 in the Ariel v. State Farm case, which states that so long as a case has been placed in a suit, appraisal can be demanded later, that the statutory framework does not have a time limit for demanding appraisal. So all of these were before the district court, and it was wrong for the district court to only focus on one of them because there was a judiciable controversy under our declaratory judgment statutes. Indeed, there were many of them. The Envoy v. Allstate case brings us on to the standard for what is a judiciable controversy.
The position that I understand the position that you're taking, it is somewhat concerning to me that it would open the door for any insured to come to court anytime they want to have a district court declare what the meaning of a policy is before there is some dispute between the insured and the insurer over the meaning of the policy. And that is concerning to me. Is that what you're asking for?
That is one thing we're asking for under the declaratory judgment statute. We are asking that before State Farm comes out with a very formal letter that says, and this is the entirety of our position, we should be allowed to proceed to court and ask for determination of those rights under the three-prong the statutes, which says that they can be construed, both statutes and contract, before there's an alleged violation of statute, before there is a breach of the contract. So we do ask for it under the declaratory judgment statutes, but also under the standard for a judiciable controversy, which is that there's a definite and concrete assertion of a legal right, a genuine conflict and tangible interest.
A genuine conflict, that's the piece I think that everyone's claiming is missing here, right?
Right.
That what at the time this complaint was filed, what was the actual conflict? What did State Farm say to your client that generated some question over the interpretation of these clauses in the insurance contract for which you're seeking declarations?
My memory is that the public adjuster for the insured and the insurer were going to visit the site to determine the insurer's position, and then that was delayed. And so then there had to be a demand for appraisal and then a suit filed, or else the claim would have expired. But that there was, if my memory is correct, that there was an inspection for this that was going to be done in fairly short order, but that was delayed.
The delay is the conflict?
Well, I think the point is that we didn't know State Farm's position. They had an opportunity to state a position and didn't take it. And under the judiciable controversy standard, what you need are parties who are adverse to one another, and an insured and an insurer in a claim situation under a policy that just is inherently a conflictual one.
Is it? I mean, if the insurer agrees to pay pursuant to the terms of the policy and cover the loss, there's no conflict, right? And you're not adverse to the insurance company.
Right, but the genuine conflict and tangible interest standard found in the case law just has to mean that there are two parties that they don't have to formally declare they are in conflict, but they have adverse interests. And the adverse interest is what needs to be paid under the policy. For example, those building codes and the full extent of the building codes. The case that's been twice before the Supreme Court now. That was at issue at the very beginning. And I think it's form over substance to allow an insurance company to say, this is our formal position, and until we take a formal position, there is no adverse interest. For example, in this case, the insurance company's final position on whether or not they would appraise was not delivered until after the order for dismissal. And that just can't be. Under our statutory framework again, insureds can pursue a claim right up until the 2-year deadline to do so. It is a very short statute of limitations, very short limitations period, and they can pursue it at any time. And if we take State Farm's position to its logical conclusion, then really at some undefined point not set forth in the statutes, there has to be a claim made, perhaps an appraisal demand, perhaps a specific rejection of something, long before the 2 years. And that is not the statutory framework. Anytime there is a claim to be made, the deadline is to serve a lawsuit. And certainly, we have a very different position from State Farm on application of the building codes and so forth.
The 2 years is the 2 years from the date of the loss.
Correct.
And coming up on that 2 years, like some days before it, CVC filed a claim.
Right.
With State Farm. If CVC had not demanded appraisal and then served the complaint, so if it had not demanded appraisal, would this be a justiciable dispute? Still, in your view, all CVC had to do is file a claim, no response yet from State Farm, but within days then file suit. Is that a justiciable claim?
Had there not been a demand for appraisal, I think there would have been a justiciable claim because of the timeline. The public adjuster filed a claim on April 8, 2024, and the insurance company then, under the policy, they have to respond. They have to have some sort of response. And there was, to the claim.
So they file it on April 8th, and they serve their district court complaint on April 12th.
Correct.
And what's the conflict that's created in between those dates?
Our position is that when we take a position on the amount of loss, which happened in detail, a very lengthy position on the amount of loss. The insurance company does need to pay that. There is no deadline for them to respond, so in the policy, so conceivably they could just run out the statute of limitations. They could conceivably wait for a very long time. Now, there.
Why is that a controversy, though? I think that the issue is, did you have some reason to believe that State Farm was not going to honor its policy after you submitted the claim or the demand?
We did. There was a prior storm and a prior case, actually, in which State Farm resisted appraisal.
That's not in the complaint.
That is not in the complaint in this matter. That is true. That is true. So
I'm going to ask you, you spend most of your argument addressing count one. I know you make some argument as to anticipatory breach as to count two. I was wondering if you wanted to address that too, as to the breach of contract and why it's your position the district court erred.
Sure. Anticipatory breach has been part of our case law for a long time, and parties can anticipate that based on the prior conduct of the parties. And in paragraph 34 of the complaint, we pled any future denial of the appraisal demand is a breach of the insurer's policy. Any future denial to pay a valid appraisal award is a breach of the insurer's policy. So that gives them notice under Rule 15 that if they don't respond to the demand for appraisal on a timely basis, that's a breach. And we think that that is enough under our standard for anticipatory breach, because we believe they would breach the appraisal clause, and they did. And they did. So if paragraphs 34 and 35 don't cut the muster, then we don't have anticipatory breach anymore. But parties can have an understanding of how these claims processes go and the past history of the parties. And then, of course,
isn't that the piece that's missing, though, from the pleading and the complaint, that you have a reasonable belief that there is going to be a future denial of an appraisal and a future denial to pay for the loss?
Well, I think under our notice pleading standard, we didn't have to put in the pleadings what we understood would transpire. But certainly at the time of motion practice, I think we had to set that forth. And I think that our briefing did set forth why we understood they would breach, and they did. They didn't respond within 20 days.
Can we consider that if it wasn't in the initial pleading, if it wasn't in the complaint?
I think
the argument your counterpart makes.
Sure. I think that under our notice pleading statute, we just have to plead sufficient facts to move us from point A to point B and get the relief that we're seeking. And I think that when we're asking for an application of the building codes, the loss, that we don't have to apportion damages between, you know, two different storms, and all of the relief that we're seeking in the declaratory judgment piece of it, which was multiple, that is enough.
Can I ask you, if we disagree with you about count two, and say we were to reverse and remand on count one, what is the practical effect that a declaratory judgment can achieve for your client going forward if you were to litigate that to a successful end?
We would achieve the appraisal that we sought. Our motion moved to compel appraisal, and I would ask the court to enforce that we do get the appraisal that we're entitled to under the Ariel v. State Farm, where this court said that.
So you'd have to separately succeed on a motion to compel appraisal, like the declaration of rights. Like, how would you, what are the remedies you would, how would you use that to, I mean, you're not seeking injunctive relief based on that, are you?
No, we would seek a judgment about applicability of the building codes and how far the amount of loss must be must go under the building codes, and we would be using the St. Matthews case v. State Farm and the recent Great Northern v. Campbell case, which is a very current topic at this court, and we would ask for that as part of motion practice. We would ask that we not have discovery, and that we're not going to have discovery about the damage between two particular storms, because it doesn't matter. We would ask for a judgment based on the appraisal award and then application of interest to it. because there's no dispute about when the claim was made, so there's no dispute about what date interest starts and when it terminates. All we need is an appraisal award to determine the amount of that loss and then apply interest to it. So it would be first an appraisal award, that would be enforced as a judgment, and then the interest statutes applied to that. And I think as the court, I see I have 46 seconds left, so as I conclude this part of the argument, I'd just like to say that the primary thing here is not State Farm's policy. It is the statutory form policy language as applied to that policy, because if they don't match, then it's the statutory language that prevails. The statute says a claim can be advanced any time before the two-year statute of limitations expires, and then under this court's recent opinion in Ariel v. State Farm, the insurer and insured obligations are not frozen in time. They continue on. For example, appraisal can be demanded later, and application of building codes can be applied much later than the 2 years. So I see that my time has expired, so I thank the court, and I hope to be back for rebuttal.
Thank you, counsel. And counsel for respondent.
Good morning, your honors and counsel. My name is Arielle Lears, and I am here on behalf of State Farm Fire and Casualty Company. May it please the court. The issue today before the court is simple. Was there a justiciable controversy existing between the parties at the time the action was commenced on April 12th of 2024? The answer is no, which is the same legal conclusion that the Rice County District Court came to in their decision. Simply, claims based on potential or hypothetical occurrences or injuries are not enough to establish justiciability. So in this case, where there's no disputes, controversies, contests between the parties, as alleged in the complaint, and as a matter of law, CVC's claim for declaratory judgment and breach of contract fail, and this court should affirm.
Doesn't the pleading place State Farm on notice that the plaintiffs are of the belief that State Farm is going to deny the appraisal and deny coverage of the loss? I mean, that is the essence of the, I mean, you know what's coming down the pike. That's the reason for this action. So why isn't that enough to cross the Walsh hurdle of placing your client on notice of what the nature of the claim is? Which actually happened. I mean, you denied the appraisal and you denied the coverage. I shouldn't say you, your client.
I appreciate that, Your Honor. I do respectfully, though, disagree. I don't believe that it placed our client on sufficient notice that this was going to happen. I mean, we're talking about a Monday to 10 a.m. on a Friday. Our client got a claim. Our client receives thousands and thousands of claims across this country, and 99% of them don't ever end up with any sort of issue or dispute or controversy. Appraisal in and of itself is not a controversial thing. It's laid out in the policy. You know, State Farm agrees to abide by the policy. That's never been an issue.
But there was no appraisal in this case, right?
There wasn't ever an appraisal. There also wasn't a dispute as to the amount of loss.
There was no appraisal.
There was no appraisal. So when CVC made a demand for appraisal on April 10th of 2024, there was no dispute as to the amount of loss. State Farm still had not done any sort of investigation, had not, you know, investigated those specific claims that were made as to those specific buildings. And by the time that State Farm went out to the property, inspected the property, that inspection did happen. Obviously, these are all facts that are not in the record before the court, but that all did happen, inspected the loss, determined, yes, there's no damage consistent with what would be, you know, that what would provide State Farm liability for under the policy. And since that point in time, there's been no demand for appraisal since that point in time. So the initial demand for appraisal wasn't, I guess, maybe ripe is maybe a good terminology for it, because there's no dispute as to the amount of loss at that point in time. But really here, and to kind of center the court, is timing does matter. Timing absolutely matters. And on April 12th of 2024, there wasn't a dispute between these two parties.
But isn't the other side of that, I mean, if you're looking at this from a HALVA notice pleading standard, we have the claim submitted on April 8th, the demand on April 10th, then paragraph 11, April 12th, as at 10 a.m., the adjuster has not agreed to tolling the period of limitations or agreed to appraise the matter. And, you know, reading this from the HALVA point of view, we have the next paragraph that says the damage is claimed from April 12th. So it's clear that the concern of the plaintiff in the complaint is that the limitations period was going to run and they haven't heard back. And so they filed the complaint on April 12th because they were worried that there wasn't going to be any tolling of the period of limitations. And so, I mean, the reason why I go through all that is I think the flip side of the question that Chief Judge Frisch asked to Mr. Beckman is, you know, about opening the floodgates to filing these suits against insurance companies is why wouldn't, and I understand it was just 4 days, but had your client simply agreed to toll the period, we probably wouldn't be having this conversation right now, right? I mean, wouldn't taking the position that this is enough in a lawsuit like this encourage a timely response at the very least to the tolling issue? I guess the concern I have is that the dispute is the fact that they hadn't heard back and that the period was clearly about to run, just looking at the complaint. And so if they sat on their hands and did nothing, his client's entire claim would be gone, potentially.
Yeah, I do understand the court's concern as to that, but the insured did have 2 years. Two years.
Right, but 2 years means 2 years. I mean, that's the point he's making. 2 years doesn't mean at some undefined point within 2 years. It means up until the 24th month, the last day of the 24th month. And so otherwise that 2 years doesn't mean 2 years, right? It means sometime before 2 years.
And I do think, though, that the two-year limitations period, that is actually what's also set out in the statute. State Farm's policy follows the statute identically. And the legislature has really decided that it's 2 years from the date of loss for somebody can make a claim. But that doesn't negate the fact that that claim still has to meet jurisdictional and pleading requirements of containing a justiciable controversy. That never goes away. Just because an insured has 2 years to file that claim with State Farm or bring suit on that claim still has to be justiciable, and that's what's lacking here. And I do think,
we infer from the lack of agreement or lack of response that there's a controversy. I mean, there's just silence on the other end. There's a request, and again, understanding it's 4 days and it's filed at the request is made at the end of the period. If you hear nothing back, I mean, we can't assume that silence is consent on the part of the insurance company to agree to appraisal and agree to pay the claim, right? You wouldn't agree to that.
Sure, but I think that the dispute is not that safe, that the insured did not hear back. If that's what it was, they really didn't do any sort of job to really discuss that in there.
It says in paragraph 11, as of April 12th at 10 a.m., the adjuster has not agreed to the tolling period, agreed to appraise the matter. So.
But State Farm had assigned a claim specialist to the claim. There's no sort of allegations that they attempted to reach out to State Farm. It's just that they filed, a claim which goes through a certain process, appraisal which also goes through a certain process, and then at 10 a.m. they just decided, oh, okay, we haven't heard back in these now presumably 3 days, right, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and at 10 a.m. they just give up and go, oh, you know what, we're going to call it good. That's enough. I mean, State Farm.
That's not entirely fair because they would be out of their claim if they didn't take any action, right? I mean, if they waited until State Farm responded, they'd be outside of the tolling or they'd be outside of the limitations period, and they would be unable to make a claim if you denied appraisal, denied coverage, which is exactly what happened.
Yeah, the insured would still be able to make a claim with State Farm, and State Farm would still investigate that loss. As counsel has noted, State Farm's never disputed that their obligations move past that 2-year time limitation.
No, but if the claim were denied, they would have no recourse.
Correct. But right. It's also...
That's the problem, right?
And I do understand the court's concern on that, but truly, the way insurance is set up is that it is the insured's responsibility to discover losses that are made to their residences or commercial properties or to their home.
I don't disagree with you. That may be true, but at this point, we're at a Rule 12 motion to dismiss, and we're supposed to, the district court and us, are supposed to take these allegations and make all reasonable inferences in favor of the non-moving party, which in this case is the insured. And so why isn't it a reasonable inference to take from paragraphs 11 and 12 that when the adjuster doesn't agree to toll the period of limitations or appraise the matter, that that is a signal that the insurance contract is not going to be honored and that there's damages associated with the failure to adhere to the terms of the insurance contract?
Because I think that paragraph 11 needs to be more than just that by 10 a.m., which is an arbitrary deadline set by the insured, that by 10 a.m. that State Farm had to somehow create its entire position on a claim that encompasses several properties, commercial properties, where it hasn't inspected, hasn't looked into it, hasn't decided yet what its positions are on this.
But the other way of reading paragraph 11 is that State Farm could have just told the period.
Right.
I mean... And it didn't.
Yeah, I think tolling the period, though, is kind of an extraordinary remedy. I mean, that's not something that typically happens in these types of situations or claims. And also, as, counsel has got up here and said, is these parties were in active litigation all through the same time period on a completely different, in a different case, but involving the same groups of properties. So this isn't as if, like, this came out of nowhere, and the insured is just bringing this up to State Farm's attention at the, last possible second. These parties were engaged in significant, I would say, discussions.
But I thought you argued in your brief that we can't consider that, right? I mean, the other part of it is, like, then are we reading into the policy's limitations period and the statute an additional clause that if the parties are in litigation and they should know better, then it's not 2 years, I mean, this is the point that Mr. Beckman's making, I think, is it does 2 years mean 2 years or not?
2 years means 2 years, but the claim still has to be justiciable. It still has to contain a justiciable controversy.
Is there anything, as I understand how you've described the contract, even a demand for appraisal cannot, which starts at time frame, that can't happen until the parties disagree on the value of the property.
That
disagreement has to come following investigation, et cetera. What is the time frame by which the insurer needs to decide whether it disagrees? I'm wondering how early, you're saying this is very complicated, blah, blah, blah. So a potential claimant knows they have 2 years in which to file a lawsuit. How do they know when they need to get this claim in State Farm's hands to get a disagreement determined?
Yes, and that's a great question, Your Honor. There are other statutory scheme works that are at play here that do protect insureds. And those have been enacted by the legislature, and those specifically outline time frame and limitations for which State Farm needs to provide responses, provide claims decisions, and those types of things. And so there's always going to be recourse for an insured. If they notice and file a claim the same date as the loss occurs, and State Farm, for instance, as I understand the court's concern, State Farm just never responds, right? So say in this hypothetical situation that happens. State Farm never responds. And then the concern is, well what? Like, then the insured wouldn't have a justiciable controversy. But in that type of case, not only would the insured have some other recourse based on a separate statutory scheme, I do think that if that insured pleads certain facts in a complaint along those same lines that, hey, I discovered this loss, the date of the loss, I filed that claim with State Farm. I've repeatedly tried to reach out to State Farm, and State Farm has never responded to me. I think that is slightly different and may...
Why? What? because one imputes from their silence that there is a disagreement. Like, what makes it different? I mean, and what is this other recourse that you talk about short of suing State Farm within 2 years of the loss?
Yes, Your Honor. So there is the Unfair Claims Practices Act, which outlines what an insurer's responsibilities are to their insured and also outlines time limitations for when the insurer needs to respond to their insured. And so the difference here being that if State Farm didn't respond within that time frame, and for instance, the time limitation is different depending on the different types of correspondence, but it's, you know, anywhere could be as short as 14 days, it could be as most as 30 or 60 days. So if State Farm didn't respond in those general timeframes, I think that would, and that was pled in a complaint, I think that could lead to a justiciable controversy, even though State Farm doesn't respond. But 3 days, truly 3 days, and when State Farm has assigned a claims adjuster, and that's outlined inside the complaint, that's outlined there, and looking at the facts of the complaint, there's nothing to suggest that, one, State Farm and the insurer dispute the amount of the loss. There's nothing to suggest that State Farm is ever going to deny the claim. And there's nothing to suggest any sort of background knowledge about between the parties, even if that was even relevant, but background knowledge leading them to believe that State Farm was all of a sudden going to deny these things. So I don't think State Farm has ever refuted that its contractual obligations move past the two-year time limitations period. It certainly handled this claim up and through and past the 2 year time limitations period. But I don't think that, I still think that there has to be a justiciable controversy when the actual litigation is filed. And that is where I sit.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your argument, and counsel for appellant, you have 5 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. There is case law in Minnesota that states that the Unfair Claims Practices Act is not enforceable for breach of contract, or even the bad faith statute 60418 specifically states that the Unfair Claims Practices Act cannot be used in that scenario. So what we have left is State Farm's policy, and more importantly, as this court wisely held in Ariel v. State Farm, the primary language comes from our legislature in 65A01 subdivision 3. That is the primary language, and as this court has correctly held that appraisal can be demanded after suit is filed and after the 2 years, there is no deadline to demand appraisal. So this case can, like all cases, can continue. The respondent wants to view this case as frozen in time when the suit is served. That is not appropriate under the statutory framework, and I hope that the court follows Ariel v. State Farm in the sense that it is the statutory language, and the statute says the insurance company must respond, but there is no deadline. But the statute also endorses a 2 year suit limitations period. That puts the insured in a very difficult spot, and they correctly, I think under Ariel v. State Farm, served the lawsuit and correctly predicted what State Farm would do.
Does the availability of other potential statutory remedies under the hypothetical that Judge Smith asked to your colleague on the other side, does that affect justiciability for the claims that your client actually brought to the district court? Does it matter that there might have been other, I mean, in our analysis of whether the claims are justiciable as pled?
Absolutely, it matters. Because we have multiple statutes that we seek relief under, we seek a declaration under, and it was wrong for the district court to only focus on one. This court in St. Matthews versus State Farm, this court in Campbell v. Great Northwestern, and now the Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court in both cases are taking a look at the extent the building codes apply, and what is that 65A10? What does that, how expansive is that? How far does it go? That was a controversy that was right there on that date. No matter what State Farm has to say or not say in a specific statute. And, you know, after the order for dismissal, we can see better State Farm's view of the world. State Farm then issues a letter, as you'll see in later in the record, document 30. State Farm says, after the order for dismissal, well, we're still taking a look, and then later on State Farm says, well, we're not going to appraisal and we just deny the claim. You know, that's a very odd thing to say when now they take the position that the claim was never judiciable in the first place. Then why are you issuing these things? Of course the claim continued. The claim had to continue.
I think maybe a misunderstanding of your response or my question was poorly asked, but what I was wondering is, in the hypothetical Judge Smith asked earlier, I understood respondent's position to be that if the claim was made on the date of the loss and then State Farm didn't respond for 2 years, there are other statutes that govern the timing of a response to a demand for appraisal, for example. And if those have been pled, then that would make this perhaps a justiciable lawsuit in respondent's view. And I guess my question is that really what matters, or is the operative fact in terms of there being a controversy that's pled in both cases, the common operative fact that there's no response? I mean, is that, in your view, the linchpin of the analysis of why this is a justiciable lawsuit?
That is the most important fact before the court, absolutely, that there was no response. We asked them to toll to overcome the statutory 2-year period, and there was silence, and that makes a controversy. But also, I would add to that, Your Honor, that under the justiciability case law and those three elements, it's much broader than what State Farm has suggested here. And State Farm has repeatedly said, until we issue some sort of very formal denial, of be it appraisal or something very formal, then there's no controversy. And I don't think that's the case law. And I don't think that that's the statutory framework. The mere fact that you've got two parties that are not, that have different interests, okay, under the declaratory judgment statute, before you walk into the night and step in a hole, you can seek judicial relief. And we sought multiple judicial relief. So I see that my time has expired, and I thank the court for its time.
Thank you. Thank you both very much for your briefing, for your arguments. The case is submitted, and we'll have a decision out in a statutory time. Thank you. Have a good day.